The Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting will now come to order. It's April 8th, 2025. It is 5 p.m. in Pacific City, Oregon, in virtual and in person at the Kiawanda Community Center, Faye Jensen Road. Rules of conduct. All cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Also, refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any kind of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. And also be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. And finally, to refrain from any speech of a political nature. Roll call. Director Price.
Here.
Director Strotska.
Here.
Director Dole. Not here. He said that he would attend in virtually, but he has not done that yet. Director Anderson is absent. All right, we'll move on to the minutes. March 11th, 2025, business meeting. Are there any corrections or deletions?
I have
hearing
none.
Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve the March 11th, 2025 business meeting minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the March 11th, 2025 business meeting minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Therefore, we have a unanimous decision. Financial report, accounts payable March 15th and March 31st, 2025. Are there any questions concerning those?
I did receive a written question from Dan earlier about a $770 charge for Pacific Power. That was actually what was owed on a previous service call after we had a credit applied to it. So it's kind of a strange amount. Usually things like that are more expensive than $700 for a service call, but that was a correction to an invoice.
What devices or area was that referred to in reference to?
The emergency generator systems that Pacific Power is the contractor we use to service our emergency generators.
Thank you. Any other comments concerning our accounts payable? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for March 15th and March 31st of 2025.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
This is moving along.
Our general ledger, fiscal year 24-25. I was kind of hoping that Rochelle was here. John, are we on budget? Close? Do we have anything individually we might be over for, or?
Well, not that's on the radar screen right now that I'm aware of. I will say that we have had an unexpected repair bill to one of our portable emergency generators. When we tried to take it up to the 100K to use it at the last time we had a power outage up there, the alternator assembly actually started sparking and caught on fire. And the staff responded great to it, but we and having to repair that, that was an unexpected bill of about $35,000. And in the act of repairing that, they found out why the system failed so catastrophically. It's because the control board on the generator is also bad. That is not regulating the voltage to the rest of the system. And that'll be another $10,000 charge, so $45,000 just to repair that one portable generator. We budget for repairs, but that was one that was unexpected. And even though we do put money in a repair fund for that, I cannot say that particular line item we may go over on because of that.
Well, and this is why we include contingency budgets in everything.
Exactly.
In all of the funds.
Exactly.
So things do happen that we can't anticipate, and we are well prepared to address those.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty good hunk of change. What does one of those generators cost on, you know, ballpark number?
Well, still probably about twice that, but...
About $100,000.
So. But it, you know, it was a repair to a generator that's been around for a while. And if I'd known that we were not going to have one thing that may be repaired, but both, we may have thought a little differently about it, but... We had already done the most expensive repair, and we have no alternative but to go forward and complete the secondary repair.
No, we have, what, five something auxiliary or four?
Yes, I believe we have five, including the ones, the Generac, the newest one we have, that we move, bounce around to the individual lift stations.
What are their ages? Or, I mean, are we just like we replace trucks once in a while? I know the last one was Vietnam era.
Yeah, but, that far predated anything else that we currently have.
What kind of shape are we in there?
I think we're in pretty good shape. We should still get a lot of life out of these. There's a couple that are older than the others.
So we're looking at maybe some, you know, maybe two or three years down the road we need to replace?
I'm hoping more like five or six.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we're in good shape.
Yeah. We may want to replace one of those within the next five or six years, but I think we've still got good life left.
Okay, cool. Okay.
And they're serviced routinely every year.
Yeah, I noticed that. Okay, well, are there any other comments or thing about the general ledger?
No.
Hearing none, let's move on to item six, manager's report. What's going on, John?
Just a question. Do we usually, you know, it's a board thing, do we usually, on the accounts payable and the ledger, we don't typically make a motion to approve. No,
not on the fiscal year. Okay. We do on accounts payable because that's month.
Got it. Thank you for that. Manager's report. Thank you, Tom. System development charges for the year. We're still hovering around 4 for water, 3 for sewer. Pretty clear we aren't going to make our projection this year the way we had the last couple years. But the year's not over yet.
I'd be surprised if we don't because of all the building that's going on in town.
Yeah.
And I did ask the question in the office today about exactly where in the process do people pay the money for the system development charges. And my understanding is that the building can be proceeding. The system development charges aren't due until hookup.
It's whenever they want their water meter and their sewer hookup, and that's
so
usually not done until the end of the building
cycle. I'm thinking that we're probably going to make that, but we'll see.
Well, fingers crossed. We've been really good at our projections for the last couple of years, and hopefully that will turn out this year, too. You know, a budget is a lot of times just making your best guess, and And sometimes, and of course, when the apartment went in, we exceeded it. So that's possible there too. But wanted to mention that we've been advertising for the vacancy on the budget committee. We haven't had any takers. We're hoping that somebody will, an application to join our budget committee will come in. But we're probably only about a month from diving into that. So, I think the board is technically considered part of the budget committee too. So the budget committee, I often think, is five people. It's really 10 people.
Exactly.
So 9 out of 10 isn't bad, but we definitely hope to fill that vacancy before that process begins. But no activity on that yet.
And how much time are you going to need if we can find someone to do that? A couple weeks from now?
I think they just have to be appointed, and right. They could even be appointed, I assume, at a budget committee meeting.
Okay.
So,
have we reached out to the existing budget committee members with a particular request?
I've managed to get a hold of a couple of them, but not the others.
So who do we have confirmed besides the board?
I believe I've talked to Karen Matthews and
Bill Height, Scott Culp.
Scott.
I talked to Bill.
Did talk to Bill?
And he said yes.
And he said yes? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But one of them last year said yes and never showed up.
I know. I don't know what came up, but we'll.
Yeah. It sounds like if we can stop cannibalizing our budget committee for our board, that we've got a pretty stationary group that has been there
but
with
it's
us
a training process.
Exactly.
Very true. Very true.
Well, I think we all work at it a little bit. Maybe we can find someone to volunteer.
Yeah, if you guys know anybody, please.
I have been. I haven't been successful yet, but.
You got to twist their arms left to right, not right to left. Yeah.
So the criteria, they have to live in this district, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Any other special criteria?
I think it's kind of the same criteria to be a board member, I think. They have to live in the community, reside
there.
Be a customer of the utility. Yeah.
Somebody you trust personally.
Pardon?
Someone you trust personally.
Yeah, yes, of course.
Yeah. So, I think it's kind of the same criteria as for the board. Mm-hmm. Unaccounted for water in March showed an improvement of 5%, which is moving in the right direction. We did find a couple of water leaks last month based off of the... the number we got for March, I think we've still got some, at least one, if not more, undiscovered leaks in our system, and we are actively looking for those. I will say that during the summertime, our unaccounted for water numbers always improve. But it's not because, unfortunately, it's not because our water leaks suddenly heal themselves if we have them. It's because when you produce more water and you sell more water, it becomes a smaller percentage of the total. So, I expect those numbers to come down, but we'll all have to evaluate exactly how and why they're coming down, because I am expecting them to drop, but I'm hoping to find the cause of some of this and continue to make repairs to those locations. But the number will drop, but we just have to be cognizant of the reason why.
It also looked like our billed water year over year was more this year than last year for the month of March, which would have been spring break.
Yeah.
So coming off of COVID years, that volume of consumption is starting to grow again.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Received the final, well, initially thought they were the final plans. I had the day after I got them, I got a call from Parametrics. They've still got a small thing to work out in terms of the ventilation of the systems. Just so you guys know, three sites will be manual transfer, meaning they will not automatically transfer to generator power until somebody goes down there and flips the switch. Those sites I'm not too worried about in that regard, because we can open the doors and get good ventilation. Airflow, that is, pretty important for keeping the generators cool while they're running, especially under load. The site at the 100K, which will be an automatic transfer switch, we need to make that particular location a little more automatic in terms of opening some louvers, allowing some airflow to offset the exhaust and stuff from the emergency generator. So other than that, one change that is coming. And it will, I believe there will be one more detailed page on the plans that I'm expecting to receive sometime in the next week or so. We are very, very close to being able to solicit quotes from contractors. I initially thought that we might do these one at a time, but I think we can, solicit quotes from contractors that includes all four locations and still be well below any requirement for a formal bid process. So that will probably be the way we go. These generator shacks are largely going to be prefabricated tough shed buildings. But we're going to need a contractor to pour the slab before we have the tough shed folks deliver the pieces for the tough shed and assemble them onto the slab in place, and then we go back to the general contractor that we hire for the job to move forward with some more of the construction work, the electrical, the mechanical side of the work. So there's things have to happen in a certain order. It'll take a little bit of management and coordination, but we'll be able to get those done. Goal is to have them all done by the end of the year. We had originally thought we would start with the 100K reservoir. I've decided to actually make the 100K reservoir the last site, because the last word I got from Tillamook County is the Ridge Road LID is picking up steam.
Oh, it is.
So
that's interesting.
If that goes through,
really?
If that goes through, we're and you live up there. If that goes through, we will be installing larger pumps, mm-hmm. which may need a larger generator, perhaps at that point even a floor-mounted generator for a purpose like that. I don't want to move forward with a generator shack for a mobile generator if a month later I find out that LID is moving forward.
And so, LID is?
Local Improvement District.
You know, it's funny, I haven't heard one, and I live there, I haven't heard one word about that.
Yeah, I'm surprised about that, Tom.
Not formally, I mean, other than what I've heard from here.
And that know. Would be an expense of that LID, would it not, if we were to need to install larger pumps?
Yes,
and so it makes perfect sense to put that at the end of the list. In fact, even possibly delay it, as it's great that you're on top of that and staying tuned to that progress.
Well, by the time we get to the last site, we'll know more,
right?
Hopefully about that. And yes, my understanding is if this goes through, not only the road improvements but also right. all the public works improvements.
Exactly.
Will be done at the LID's expense. We'll
electrical, water, sewer, all of it.
We'll assume ownership of the public works items after they're installed, but I don't want to spend money on something if the whole plan is going to change
exactly.
a short time later. So moving a little cautiously at the 100K site.
I can see why.
Wanted to mention that I intend to engage with our design firm Parametrics. It's time to start thinking about possibly another road pipeline replacement project. I know that the few runs of AC pipe, asbestos cement pipe we have in our system, are something that is targeted to be replaced. We have a 12-inch transmission main that runs up North Broughton Road from Redicop all the way to the four-way stop. Now, this is a transmission main. Usually engineers like to leave transmission mains alone because they've got a job, and it's not necessarily to double as a water main. But I think in this case, if I can get approval from the engineers to do so, it makes sense to retap all those services on North Broughton to that 12-inch ductile iron transmission main, and then we don't have to install a new pipe in the middle of the road, and we can simply abandon the AC pipe in place. So if we don't have to remove an old pipeline and we don't have to install a new pipeline, all we have to do to eliminate that AC line from our system is to retap all those homes to the 12-inch transmission main. It would be a great way for us to save a lot of money and to get this job done with minimal disruption. As everybody knows, Broughton Road is one of the major arteries in town. Not a job we'll do in the heights of summer, but if we can get that work done without digging up that whole road, that would sure be a good thing. So we're going to explore that, and if that is approved, I believe that will be our next pipeline project that we attempt to do. And once that's done, we've only got two more runs of AC pipe left. One is east on Pacific at the four-way stop up toward Hill Street, and then another one that runs from, I believe, the four-way stop south to the Slough Bridge. And then we'll have all the AC line out of the system. So.
Can I just add, for the record, my understanding is that when we say AC pipe, that does involve asbestos, but asbestos is actually a coating to the pipe. It is not, the pipe is not made of asbestos, and it has no contact with the water.
Well,
is that
it does have potential contact with the water
if there's a break.
Well, or if the pipe wears, but the hazard with asbestos is an inhalation hazard.
Yeah.
My understanding, it's not even a consumption hazard, it's an inhalation hazard. And as long as that pipe is wet and is, you know, not cut into or broken or those things, you will not get those dry fibers airborne that could be inhaled.
The important part is that the fact that it's there has not been a health hazard for the last 5 decades.
No, and that's a great point, Ann.
Thank
it is not a health hazard. There are a lot of systems that have asbestos cement pipe. The reason that they have largely quit using it, and the reason we want to get rid of it, is if we have a break in that pipe and we have to cut a section out, well, that does become an airborne particle hazard.
Yeah.
So it's the tapping, it's the break of the breaks or the repairs that might need to be done that we want to avoid. And by eliminating it out of our system, we won't have to worry about any future breaks on an asbestos cement pipe.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Now, our main line is a 12-inch line that's running down Broughton already there. Are there any hazards into tapping into it other than a separate smaller line?
No, should be no hazards at all with tapping into that. you know, usually it's a larger pipe than most of the taps we do. It'll require a larger tapping saddle. But other than that, it will be pretty routine. We tap pipes for new water services all the time. This one's bigger than most of them we tap, but we can use the same equipment. We just need a larger saddle to actually connect the tap to, which is a little bit of added expense, but certainly nowhere near what it would cost to put a new 6-inch pipe on.
The preliminary engineering by Parametrics, any engineering I understand is expensive, but is this anything special that we need to vote on because of it's a high cost? I would think, you know, trying to figure out what this would cost down the main drag of Broughton Road would be, you know, disruptive and everything. The timeline, because of this main water line being able to be tapped into, sounds like a tremendous amount of time saved and disruption. But as far as the engineering itself, is it going to go over our usual amount of money that you think that we would need to vote on?
Well, a couple of thoughts. One, there will be some engineering involved, but it won't be because the task will be much simpler. It should not be a big engineering job. The actual work, and we will contract it out because we'll want to get this done as quickly as possible and have a contractor focused on just this job and completing this job. That cost will certainly exceed the threshold that we need a board approval for. It should not, again, it should not, in my estimation, be expensive enough that it requires a formal bid process the way Rupel did.
Good. Okay.
So,
it'll be what it is, and we'll do the right
thing.
Well,
it's in our master plan, and it's something that we want to get done. And I applaud you for looking into the future here and trying to do this, because I think it's a good thing for our community. Get that out. It's been a big headache in the past, and let's get her done. It's a very practical thing that we need to get done. So, thanks for your looking into this for us.
Well, thank you. And Leonard was a part of that too. Leonard Wayman, I want to say. But it's a job that, if our plan is approved by our engineers, it's a job that we will attempt to get done this fall.
Great.
Oh, outstanding.
So we want to wait until tourist season's passed. And
so the engineering is not going to be that complicated yet.
It should not be that complicated at all.
Outstanding.
So
we ought
to save some money by doing it this way on the engineering side as well. The last item on the manager's report, Jeb Pippinger, during the month of March, passed a certification test, collection level 1. Congratulations to Jeb.
Yay, Jeb.
Well done,
Jeb.
And this week he's going after a treatment certification.
Excellent for him. Excellent.
Okay. Yep. So he's going after it.
Very happy to hear that.
Very happy about that.
One other side note, John. Here a few months ago, we approved a training possibility, or an addition to our normal training certification. For the managerial skills. Do we have any employees participating in that by any chance?
My understanding is that we do have a couple. I can't tell you at what clip or how far they've gotten with it.
But I'm glad you're taking advantage.
But my understanding is we do have at least a couple.
Outstanding.
I'm sure you'll appreciate the feedback you get from them too in their experience.
Absolutely. That's good news.
That's it for the manager's report, Tom.
Okay, thank you, John. We'll move on to item 7, unfinished business. And somehow or another, we don't have any. So we'll move on to new business.
So can I ask a question?
Sure.
So for unfinished business, can you give us a little report on the Hunter situation after you contacted him about the water leak?
Mr. Hunter.
Hunter that applied for the appeal.
They came in, paid the full amount, and I believe they feel like the situation's resolved. I believe we feel like it's resolved. The situation, as we all know, it's easy to have empathy for folks in this situation, but you know, the last thing I told Mr. Hunter was that he handled all this with a great deal of dignity and class.
He did.
And,
yes.
Just a great couple of people. And we're glad it's behind us.
Glad to hear that. And he didn't want to have a payment plan or anything.
No, it was offered, but they just wanted to get it squared away.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah. I'm happy that they were able to do that. And certainly, feel, because I walked in his shoes too, so I personally feel his pain. And it's just is what it is,
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think that's behind us, and they're moving on with the work they've got to do to get everything put back together over there.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
No, nope, that was it. I just
Kathy. Okay. Well, let's move on to item 8, new business. Employee interviews for authority manager review. John?
Yeah, well, it's time to start thinking about this again. It's amazing how fast it comes around.
It seems like we just did it.
I know.
I think it's a great process. I think it's been really good for our group.
Well, it's given the board the feedback they need, and that's important feedback. And it's something that has been lacking in the past that the board has, there's been a void in that that knowledge. Not just, you guys see the authority manager, you're familiar with the authority manager. It's important for the board to get perspective from the people that work with me every single day. And we often spend more time with the people we work with than we do our own family.
Yeah.
So I think that's valuable feedback. Really, the only reason for it on the agenda was to let the board know it's time to start thinking about this. If you'd like me to make the same arrangements I've made in the past, I'm happy to do that. On the agenda just to let everybody know it's time to get going on that. Wanted to know if the board wanted me to proceed the way I have with setting that up the last several years, and to see if the board is content with the process and would like to see it carry on in its current form. And
I'm happy with how it worked last year.
Okay.
I think it was quite smooth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Personally, I'm just see. Yeah, full steam ahead.
Okay. I have not reached out to our HR counsel, our representative yet.
Danette.
Yeah.
But
this is a good first step, and then you can do that.
I have no reason to doubt that she would be happy to do that again for us.
Yeah.
So I will get the ball rolling on that then with the board's approval. And we'll get that process done, and then it's soon it'll be time to do my self-eval, which the only thing that I find more difficult than employee evals is a self-eval. But it's part of the process, and hopefully that feedback helps you guys as well.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Well, other than that, you have a consensus here to continue on.
Okay.
So new business under item B, employee phone stipend agreement. John, you want to? I read some of your stuff, and I still have a couple of concerns, but go ahead and explain why you think it's necessary.
Yeah, well, and I had introduced this a couple years ago. In fact, it might have been the first month Kathy was even with us. And, got a little bit of mixed reaction from the board. So I decided to pull it away and kind of see how things went. Over the last couple of years, the reasons for something like this have only grown stronger, in my opinion. We currently provide work cell phones to the vast majority of our staff. And those cell phones cost money, not just for the phone itself, but to maintain all those different phone numbers and to maintain all those different accounts within our account.
Who's the carrier for them?
I believe it's Verizon.
Right.
Yeah. And, but what we've noticed is that the staff still have a tendency to use their personal phones for a lot of business-related stuff. And in fact, over half of them have their work numbers just being forwarded to their personal cell phones. So it's pretty clear that our current system is still far from optimized. And you know, it seems like what I'd like to do with this, my primary goal is really to reduce redundancy and waste and to simplify things. And I believe that allowing the staff to just carry their personal cell phones, you know, when you've got your work cell phone, you've got your personal cell phone. If you're on duty, you've got the on-duty operator cell phone. We have Zoleo satellite paging devices for each staff member.
So that's potentially four devices one person could have to be carrying.
And, when I first came to work here, we also mandated that PCJ employees maintain a home landline. Well, I did away with that fairly soon after I came to work here because I thought that was over the top.
Mm-hmm. That has changed.
That has changed, this has evolved, and I'd like to see it evolve a little bit more. These types of arrangements are widespread. There are thousands of companies that have similar programs, including large companies like Amazon and Meta, or is it Meta now?
Meta.
Yeah. All these, they have similar programs. It's pretty tough, regardless of what job you have in this day and age, to be able to do your job without a cell phone. And our staff, our field staff, who are the folks that are on call, the folks we try to call during emergencies, these staff don't typically have access to a computer, to the way I do or the way the office staff does. So they rely on cell phones to do everything from answer their work emails to receive work orders and close work orders. They access our mission control system through the cell phones. And of course, they make and receive work-related calls on these phones. And when they're at work, we're always calling them and we need them to answer when we call. So these, the need for these cell phone for our staff is not going away. I will also say that this has evolved to where it's including the office staff now. Even though the office staff have computers on their desk that they can use for their email and other things, our programs, that some of our software programs we have, primarily the ones that are cloud-based, like our Springbrook program, which is our primary financial software. It's the software we access every time a customer calls us and they want to make a payment on their account. It's our customer account management software. Well, these kinds of softwares now require something called multi-factor authentication, which means to even log in, you don't just log in the way you used to. They want you to prove it's you. And how do they do that? They send you a text on a cell phone.
Right.
So.
And then you put in the code that they sent you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and currently the office staff does not have a work issued cell phone, but we need to consider pulling them into this program as well, because if one of our office staff decided to exercise their right to leave their personal cell phone at home, they couldn't even do the basic functions of their job. So I think it's time to pull them into consideration with this too. Now, with this stipend, it's the amount of the stipend we're proposing corresponds pretty closely with our monthly cost for each individual phone. So there really won't be any additional expense there. It'll be a break-even thing. Although, if we pull the office staff into it, that will be the equivalent of adding two more people. But I think it's the right thing to do at this point.
Okay, so you would be getting rid of the old work phones, and they would use their personal phones, and we would compensate them financially for doing that.
I do want to say that people have the option to opt out of it if they want to keep their work and their personal stuff set.
Okay.
But I don't think many people would, but sorry to interrupt.
Okay. So with your plan now, with your work phone plan now, do you get a financial break with a certain number of phones? Because usually, you know, if you have two phones, three phones, it gets cheaper with each additional phone.
Yeah, well, I know that I believe that's the way it is with our phone plan at home.
But this bottom line of what you're proposing here,
it's the
is the equivalent of what we're paying now.
How many phones do our folks carry that belong to the authority?
Well, they carry the Zolio, which belongs to the authority, the satellite paging device. But in terms of just cell phones, we have, including myself, 9 out of 11 people currently have these phones. And, you know, and I'll tell you a secret about my situation. I haven't paid personally for a cell phone in 35 years. And I use my work phone for my personal stuff. In this case, we'd just be allowing the employees to use their personal phone for work stuff. They're already doing it anyway. And so I think that this is just a move that makes sense. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read that article I sent out.
I did. That was a very interesting article.
You know, because for a while we were debating about whether to call it a reimbursement or a stipend. I think stipend
makes a lot more sense. Like
most simple thing. It's a reimbursement requires a lot of office work
and employee work.
Yeah,
individually.
Time would be big time wasted with that way. The stipend. I looked at my own phone bill. I have AT&T and it's like $80 a month. My phone is my own, so basically half of that, plus encouraging the extra $10 to insure their phone, is very reasonable. My big question is revolving around employee taxes, because they're going to have, or correct me if I'm wrong, the way I was looking at that stipend article, is they may have to document how much time they actually use their phone for business, and
only if we use the reimbursement model.
So they do they have to use that stipend as money, as extra income?
No.
Not in the manner we're utilizing it for. As long as it's a benefit to the employer, and
it's like health insurance or anything else. It's a benefit.
That's it. And they're based off of the way our program would be set up, it would not be considered taxable.
The other thing that concerned me was the way our agreement is set up is that the employee has to have a way to allow or a way to document what their phone was used for and to who and what and where and all that under the law for public records, public records law. Now, what extra effort do they have to do to make sure that that's part of it?
Well, my understanding is it doesn't have to be part of it.
In your form, you had said that they had to make sure that they.
Well, they have
had,
to.
They could do. Let me see if I can find the exact wording here. Excuse me a second.
Oh, comply with all federal and state data maintenance and protection laws?
Yeah. Ah, here it is. Federal state maintenance and protection laws, for example, for record retention requirements.
I don't think there are any record retention requirements. I will say that some of this language was taken from another company's model, not all of it, some of it was. I do not believe there is any record retention laws. And if
For example, if we were sued for something, and we have, it was required that we come up with how we communicated or what was communicated between employees and management, for example, for a certain situation that we were being sued for. So how would we, you know, guarantee, those kind of records?
Well, you couldn't guarantee that on a work phone either. They can delete whatever they want.
Well,
and you vetted this proposal with our lawyers.
If we have a FOIA request, Freedom of Information request, how could we, it'd be he said, she said kind of thing if we didn't have a way to document. You hear national news where Texas and voice communications are easily documented in a FOIA request. And we, of course, we've never entered into that, but, you know, the way this is written, and understanding the law as little as I understand it, I'd be very practical here, is that how would we, you're asking the employee to make sure, because it's their personal device, to make sure that voice and texting documentation is available. You know, the ballpark well, way that I read
I think it's
it.
Compelling in that venue that John has discussed this thoroughly with our law firm, and they, in fact, two years ago, they function this way. So if it's good enough for our lawyers and they say it's okay for us,
well, that's my main
concern. I think
concern.
We've dotted that I or crossed that.
I think this is my main concern.
Yeah,
data security, data availability. If we were in a litigating search situation.
Would it be worth your time, John, just to double-check again with our lawyers that specific point?
I can
point?
Do that. I mean,
This puts the onus on the employee instead of us. And I think that's a little much for the employee.
But it's the same if they have a work phone, because they can lose their work phone, they can deliberately lose their work
phone. That's not the point. The point is that if it's a work phone, the onus is on us as an employer and owner of those phones to have access to those texting and voicemail records that may be under litigated situations. The way this is written says this is for the employee responsibility, where it says the employee has to comply with all federal and state data maintenance and protection laws.
Well, let me check into that.
I'm trying to take the onus off the employee.
Well, what I will say is, even if we kept these as work phones, we couldn't guarantee that we would be doing that anyway. In fact, it would be impossible to do.
And the legal system has ways of diving back into these records and getting what they want in the process. If our lawyers have vetted this line,
check with the attorneys, I think, but eliminate that whole thing.
And that might be good. I do like the statement where the second half of the statement where it says as well as all PCJ policies, including those pertaining to data security, acceptable computing use, and email. I think the intent is that they will keep any PCJ business that might involve a customer or a customer issue. Certainly, you got to keep that private. There are data security, I think, is a lot of times kind of a buzzword that I think the phone itself probably does most of those tasks. But, the thing about it is that we don't want them using email for their email address for nefarious purposes or what have you. And I will say that, these programs are so widespread now, I've got to believe that this has all been litigated many times. And I will say that this is the same stumbling block that I didn't get over the last time, or similar types of things. So I think all the what ifs, those what ifs are going to be in place, whether it's an employee using a phone owned by us, or whether it's an employee using their personal phone. In fact, I would argue that by using their personal phone, if they were to somehow get into some kind of mischief, we actually have less liability in that case than
I would argue that too.
Well, once again, my concern is under employee responsibilities. They have to comply, it says, comply with federal yada yada. Well, a lot of that's common sense, but I know you took a lot of this data out of a public forum. So I'm thinking we eliminate that whole thing. But in this,
I'm not comfortable with eliminating it
of the employee.
I think it's an important topic.
I think it would sure be cool if we could get a better understanding legally from our law. I don't want to have our employees think that, oh my God, I gotta do all this that I don't know have any understanding for.
Well, all they have to do is decline to use their own phone. Work phone. So
that's true. The idea is to let them use the work phone because it makes their workflow easier. That's the goal here. I understand that.
Sure.
But I need to find out why we. Give me a reason why we can't eliminate that whole line. For that whole responsibility.
Yeah, I'll check into it. this was something that I put in trusting that the people that had it in before knew more than I did. Honestly, I don't know what FERPA stands for.
Me neither.
But I think the
Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act.
Oh, okay. I think the implication is that
I was a registrar and I was responsible for privacy of educational records.
Oh, okay. this might just be one of those five fine print disclaimers that is just meant to be some kind of a catch-all type of check the box statement. But I will find out. I definitely wouldn't want this or any unreasonable expectation to never delete a voicemail, never delete a text, never delete an email. I certainly don't want to paint the staff into a corner like that. And if we need to make a couple of edits to this section, I'm happy to.
I like the idea of eliminating all the extra toys and tools that are necessary, and that's our goal here. Well, I understand that, and I think that's good.
And this could be an example of certain federal or state employees in sensitive positions who would be subject to various data maintenance and protection laws or record retention laws, but I have to believe these laws wouldn't apply to us in this situation. It's never been a concern with our work-issued phones, so I hate to see us clutch our pearls too hard about it in this case, but your point's made, Tom, and I do respect that. Let me clean this up if I feel it needs to after talking to our legal counsel.
I think it's a big enough issue that we need to have the full board. You know, there's only three of us here today, so if at the next meeting you can bring back some input from the attorneys, and then we can talk about it and see what direction we want to go.
Yeah, and the reason I'm here talking about it is, you know, I want the board's input, I want the board's buy-in. You know, there's some question on whether this is an issue that requires board approval or whether it's in my purview. I hate to kick this down the road too far, but I can certainly do that for sure.
Thank you.
One last thing, I'll correct myself. It's not federal, it's Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. So
yeah,
for the minutes,
which
it should be said correctly.
No, that's good. And I think there are some phone uses where a higher level of regulation certainly would apply. I don't think it's ours, and if it's not ours, then the point that maybe we should remove this is probably valid.
Well, so. Thank you, John. I think your whole idea here to simplify our life for our people is admirable,
yeah.
And that's what we're shooting for. I got to look at the liability side of it because that's our overview and that's our job.
Sure.
And I think probably your conception of this may not even apply to us, but we are a public entity. So it's hard to say. So if to getting a legal opinion, and the way I look at it, we just eliminate that whole section.
And that's good. I guess maybe one question for the board, just so that we don't want to raise the bar very higher than it needs to be. Just philosophically, does the board feel as though employees using their personal phones or us having issued work supplied phones, do you think that the bar or the standard is different simply by virtue of that dynamic?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, do you understand the question?
Yes, and I don't know about them, but I tell you for myself, if I was using my own personal phone and I was getting reimbursed to do it, I would take it much more seriously.
Yeah. Than what you might do with your personal phone.
Yeah,
anyway.
Because the money factor for me makes it I would have a higher degree of responsibility.
Yeah.
Yes, I think you're right there.
I agree.
Yeah, but you don't think there's any
more buy-in.
You don't think the You don't think the liability issues are enhanced?
I don't know. I have a feeling it is.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, just trying to, wanted to get a general sense of, you know, how the board's feeling about this. It's, I personally don't see a change in standard or a change in risk or a change in liability from one method versus the other.
I'm just trying
to, I honestly don't.
I'm looking out for, I'm being a negative nanny here, but I'm,
well, you're
I'm looking out for the employee here. Yeah. Are we putting them in a situation maybe where there's some liability there that we don't need to? And I certainly understand the convenience of it, the practicality of it, because the less money we'd spend for the associate or the authority, and the convenience for the employees. That I think we can all agree on. But the liability side, I don't want to put the employees into, you know, we all work well together. It's that one in a million thing that happens. And I don't want to put them there.
Sure.
So if we can put, if we can make something that takes care of the practicality side, hey, I'm all for it.
Okay.
Good.
Well, good enough. Well, thank you for that feedback. Dan had a variety of questions, too. He's not here, but I responded to his questions. He had submitted those to me in writing ahead
and,
of time.
And we'll have it on the agenda next
month. And we can put that on the agenda
okay.
for
Outstanding.
Next month.
Well, thank you for this conversation. I think it's...
Sure. Well, it's, you know, this is not only a potential policy change, this is an actually a way that we are redirecting these funds from a cell phone carrier to directly to our employees. And I feel like this is definitely an issue that needs board input.
Just ballpark, it looks like a $10,000 or $12,000 thing that we can, money that we can save a year.
We're paying it anyway.
Yeah.
We're paying, we're just going to make the same basic payment to the employee instead of Verizon.
No, I think it's going to be about half of that. Well, the stipend that we would give the employees is only about half of what it costs us to operate our own telephones. So we eliminate.
That's not what I understood John to say.
No,
you don't think so?
No, I want to be clear is that the stipend, in my view, should be set up not based on what it costs an employee to maintain their phone or their phone plan. It should be set up based on what it costs to provide them with that work issued telephone. And it's only about $50 a month for each line.
Really?
Yeah. So,
but you have to buy the phone.
Well, you have to buy the phone too, and I think that when we upgrade somebody's phone, their price goes up for a while, and it seems like other people tend to be a little variable. I mean, they come down. But what I will say is that our phones, we get them as cheaply and in often cases free just by maintaining the account. And I don't think we spend a lot on these
monthly
phones.
Monthly service.
I mean, just, you know, the monthly, you know.
So the advantage here is totally convenience for the employees, but our what we spend on them would wash each other out.
That is, and we looked at this, we looked at everybody's individual account.
I thought there
account.
Was a bigger savings than that, so no. It's all convenience.
No, it's well, it's convenience, but it's simplifying things. It's eliminating redundancy and so forth with all these devices.
Making things more efficient.
It is. And, it is how we came up with the $50 is that is the average phone bill, phone bill for each number that we maintain.
I'm paid way too much for mine. paying like $80 a month. But right. God, there's.
Well, yeah. You know, maybe you have higher data usage.
I think this is also a matter of the technology that we have available and our social adjustment to it,
yeah.
And things that we can do that we've been afraid to do because the technology was new. And I think we're all learning that the technology is actually more secure and more reliable than we were thinking 10 years ago. And so it's part of the evolution of industrial use of these phones.
I would agree. I mean, cell phones are so ubiquitous now that a lot of employers are going to a program like this because
right.
they know people already have a cell phone.
Right, cool.
Maybe 20 years ago, there weren't quite as many people that was the case.
Well, if we can have all our board here, I think we can settle this up next month.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, John, thank you.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate the feedback.
All right, that's item 8B, so we'll move on to item 9, guest questions and comments. Let's see here. We have... we did have Tim on, but he dropped off, so...
Oh, he was?
I didn't notice
He
that.
Never showed up there.
He was on there for a while.
It looks like Jeb's the only guy, and Jeb's doing good. He was at a class today, and he's even joined us... And he may be joining us from Salem for all I know. But anyway,
cool.
I'm glad to have Jeb here. I don't. He's the only one I see. Tom, maybe he has some questions, but I couldn't really hear him earlier. I thought he tried to talk to us.
Jeb, I see your mic is off. Do you have any comments or? And if not. There you go. Your mic's on. Go ahead on.
Well,
is the volume up?
Oh, my volume's up.
No.
Oh.
Oh.
No.
Jeb, hey, Jeb.
Hey.
Congratulations.
You there?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you have any questions? We're at the point in the agenda.
No questions for me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on to Chair Director comments. I have no comments other than congratulations for Jeff's achievement here on his credentials that he just got. Any other directors, do you have any comments?
No.
All righty then. Well, here it is, Ed. Hardly got to use this today. So it is now 18:07 in military standards, or we'll just call it 6:07 p.m., and this meeting is adjourned.